A very big welcome to you, the listener, to this, the first take in what will hopefully be a great series, recording my experiences and exploits, the good days and the bad days, as I travel through Southeast Asia over the next 6 months. I shall start with a few words in the form of a poem, titled Words Crystallized. But why, dear friend, do you criticize me? Is it not known that I am destined to roam and not e'er to settle upon this life's ever-troubled foam? The joy, the mystery, the sadness, the false glory of life without a harness, the unsung joys of yesterday, the unsettled happiness of today, but tomorrow, the future, a mystery remains. And now, to return to November 93, Tuesday the 23rd. I have started this diary, as with many other prior activities and actions, with considerable gusto, as to date, many sunsets have transpired. Even as we headed to the airport, reality of the process due to begin seemed transfixed in a different world. Slowly and yet rapidly at the airport, a feeling of excitement and nervousness settled in. A departure of shortly after 2 p.m. was to be combined with a 10-hour flight and a 6-hour time advance, leaving our arrival in Singapore at 6 o'clock Wednesday morning local time. The earlier plan of gaining some sleep on the plane faded as quickly as the daylight that day as we sped eastwards. The arrival by Singapore Airlines at the immaculately unreal Changi Airport found me feeling tired and inevitably hungover. It seemed to happen so naturally. Processed efficiently through the port like packaged meat on an assembly line, I found in a somewhat drowsy state the regularly departing bus. The transition from the air-conditioned chill of the plane and the airport to the clammy heat and then back to the air-conditioned chill of the bus, combined with that ever-prevailing feeling of internal, focused excitement, reflected the environment that saw me be propelled speedily into the city. Clumsily, I found my way to number 37 Bridge Road, to a hotel called Shangon, which I had selected from the guidebook. It is close by the infamous Raffles Hotel, perhaps adds an air of affluence to the district. By this stage, the entrance exit of what is traditionally termed the lobby of the hotel was full. It only took some 3 others to do so. In asking for a room, I easily settled for the only available at that time, so about 8 o'clock, which is located directly behind the counter on the ground floor. Not that directly behind the counter, but sort of thing. Since you gathered the dress anyway. The room was clean and basic, and upon that mattress I fell into a deep but restless sleep with no hesitancy. The restless sleep was punctuated by near panic awakenings, steeped in thoughts of lostness. At one stage, a full-scale verbal war broke out, and it wasn't in Gaelic either. Were the two protagonists eventually, or was it suddenly stopping? Who knows? Slowly and steadily, a sense of reality began returning to mind, that is my mind. The overhead fan had been droning on, blowing like waves of the sea, waves of apparently cooler air in a sea of moderate humidity. Who's to define moderate? Is it some richer scale that says such a thing as moderate or is not moderate? The truth is, and was, that the air hung from the crown of my head that morning like a warm, wet blanket. The period from Thursday the 25th to Sunday the 28th inclusive I have taken together, because the events of that period rolled smoothly from day to day without any major changes. The original plan had been to spend till Friday in Singapore, leaving on Saturday morning. the objective in that time having been to acclimatise myself and my stomach, and also to avoid expensive cities. A pulled muscle in my left foot on the Thursday worsened by continuing to walk on the Friday, and my brilliant doctor meant that by Saturday morning I could not put any pressure on it, thereby delaying my departure to Monday and leaving me with a very frustrating Saturday resting a foot. During my stay on Wednesday, I walked through the various streets and areas, bringing back the many fond memories of Chinatown, with its ever-bustling trading stores, and the air clothed in a thousand different smells, each one trying to strike its dominance, but failing so admirably. Orchard Road, with its unbridled commercialism of the Christmas spirit. I wondered for a few moments whether the mark of the Christmas festival, the 25th of December, had been moved a month earlier. A completely wasted trip during this time was a visit to the Isle of St. Tosa, just out of Singapore. Certainly it was less crowded than a year previously, but the crowds itself frustrated my attempts to try and gain an understanding of what was going on. But this time, less crowded, it had even acquired more tourist traps. A noted feature this time was the accelerating pace by which the albeit run-down two-story buildings, situated on the verges of Chinatown and the First World Business District, were being replaced, systematically destroyed, by recreations whose concept would perhaps, while perhaps noble in spirit, resulted in an orgy of plastic-induced poor taste, coupled with higher prices for everything. The overriding conclusion is that Singapore is becoming just one more featureless world, standard world, replaceable anywhere. A gigantic shopping center with add-ons to keep the tourists happy and to keep the tourists money. A visit to the Jurong Bird Park on Sunday reversed some of the earlier disappointments reflected in these criticisms. It is in general a very well laid out and extremely informative park, hosting in a combination of cages, night sections, simulated arctic conditions, and pens large and spacious for various birds of prey. In addition, a large walk-in aviary was a treat and a novelty in itself, and certainly tested the observation skills in the dense foliage. A disappointment in this was a particular falcon section, which included one of the great peregrine falcons, chained beside a water table in the shade. What luxury for the benefit of lazy photographers. But then is it educational at all to keep cheetahs in zoos? The contrast and conflict ever riding between nature conservation, people education, and animal freedom cannot be resolved for the benefit of all simply and satisfactorily. Although I wonder whether this falcon had ever been asked its opinion on the matter. Before closing this episode, a final word on the accommodation. A bare, very clean, simple room, slightly run down, containing a double bed, a washhand basin, table and chair. There was not much room for much else, and its room was probably measured about 7 foot by 7. The walls, thin, rising to within a foot of the ceiling, with a gap closed in by a wire mesh. Common feature of many of the older hotels, the objective being to improve the circulation of air between the rooms, and also, by accident, or was it by design, to improve the circulation of noises of the early morning wakenings. Oh, and let's not forget that great fan, the sound of which you may be hearing in the background as well, as it drones steadily on, keeping that air moving. Monday, the 29th of November, a day started early with my left foot. Yes, my left foot. Sounded like the start of a great novel. I think it was already. being placed gingerly on the bare concrete floor more of the bus. It really had hurt me before, but reinforced the voluntary vulnerability of my situation. Bag packed and off we left, that is a bag and I, for the bus terminal. The air-conditioned bus eventually arrived. The ever-lengthening queue of people began to move slowly forwards. The heat of the day was rapidly building up as we left the city of Singapore at about 9. A very uneventful trip to the border crossing, rapidly processed, smoothly and efficiently into Malaysia via the customs and immigration. The initial visual and nasal impression of Johor Bahru, city on the Malaysian side of the border, was of a less dynamic and less antiseptic environment. It was definitely not antiseptic at all. It was certainly less plastic and more dilapidated than Singapore. I wonder sometimes whether these two concepts of plastic and dilapidation are diametrically opposed. The bus station at Johor Bahru was in sharp contrast, a bustling and chaotically organized point of arrivals and departures, with buses arriving and leaving every minute or so. A two-hour wait ensued before it became time to start moving for the 1 o'clock departure. Departure to this village of Mersing, supposedly a sleepy village of fishing pursuits on the east coast, some 130 kilometers northeastward of Johor Bahru. I had expected slowness in this part of the world, but at one shot we pulled out on a 2.5-3 hour journey with air conditioning, comfortable reclining seats, a video and music channel, all comfort appeared laid on. As we left the city of Johor Bahru behind and headed out through a major road construction site of all things, which was the last on half the trip. Major construction works? Country must be doing well. It's certainly not European Community money. The video refused to work, and the music channel played a melodiously repetitious tune, or there could have been more than one tune. Besides the excitement offered by the semi-busy roadworks and the presence of lots and lots of mud, the road wound its way along the base of endless valleys and rubber plantations. Or could have been just one big long valley anyway. But overall, the scenery was quite disappointing. If you were looking for massive mountain ranges and all that kind of thing in the Dukes. Okay, let's carry on. It was about 4 that we arrived in Mersing. Having selected the hotel and found it quite easily, I moved in to a lukewarm shower, refreshing as it was. It was actually cold, but I'm certainly developing an aversion to hot water in this part of the world, as it is not readily available in most of the buildings and serves little purpose, even if it was to be. Taking a walk around Mersing, waiting for the various eateries to open that early evening, I was taken in by the layout of the village, or the town, whatever. The center roundabout, where we had been discharged earlier, was the real focal point, with 4 streets of varying lengths and vibrancy radiating like the spokes of a wheel from it. The port itself, which crossed under one of these streets, was a long, relatively narrow estuary, some 80 to 100 meters wide, with a makeshift jetty's moorings on either side. The estuary appeared full with a multitude of fishing vessels, some 2 to 3 deep on either side, practically all colored light blue, and all were definitely painted at the same time, some long time ago. Most of the vessels were about 40 to 60 feet in length, and pretty run down in general appearance. Being in a fishing port, it only seemed natural to get right stuck into the seafood. In terms of health, I was, and still am, feeling fitter and stronger. But to return to the food. The budget was to be moderate, not tight, and the variety to be good. Difficult for one night. Next to the roundabout, this is the third mention of the infamous roundabout, while some child is getting strangled outside, is an open-air trader stand with about some 6 food stalls. Picking one at random, I tried to order. Tried being a definite overstatement, as I could not communicate, and I therefore could not order anything traditional. Terrible disappointment was beginning to set in when I saw a couple put a bowl or two of seashells and a dip. It looked safe, so I ordered the same. It's called order, locally. Small, very small, oyster-type shells. Shaped, the seafood content, shaped like mussels. Colored of oysters, and flavored somewhat between the two, with a very silken texture. With the chili sauce accompaniment, it was very flavorsome, although not too wholesome. The next port of call, if you can pardon this terrible pun, was for drunken prawns. I cannot become drunken too much in this trip because of the money sign. But these prawns were definitely drunk. They were firm and tasting of the sea. And finally, in a third establishment, some sweet and sour crab. A wonderful delicacy in itself and great finger-licking goodness. All of this cost about some $4 US for the equivalent. I wound up that evening, sitting back on the ground floor of the hotel which opened onto the busy street to watch the soul and spirit immersing pass by. It seems to be a habit to ride up and down the streets in various vehicles. The maximum on a moped, a very popular form of transport in this part of the world, is a family of 4, 2 adults and 2 children. Seems a risky venture, but does the job, why not? Tuesday the 30th. Yet another day dawns and another adventure begins. Besides Mersing being a convenient stop on the East Coast, it also represents a departure point for Tioman Island, a relatively small island being part of a larger chain. Measures some 40 kilometers long and 12 kilometers wide, east to west. Situated about 2 hours from the mainland in a high-powered boat carrying some 90 passengers. We called in at first several of the more southerly ports on the west coast before arriving at Kampong Erbatan, the place where I was to stay. Our approach to the island was, by the way, taking place during this monsoon season. Yes, it's still raining outside. Doesn't seem too bad when you're on a long holiday, though. And as the island appeared, its tall mountain peaks rising sharply from the beach, peaks which emerged and disappeared behind passing swirls of mist. Sounds romantic. In eventually passing through to Camp ABC, which is the particular lodgings I was staying in, a short walk from the jetty, I quite simply did nothing for this afternoon. One of the things I was to learn in my 5 days on this island is that it is very easy to do absolutely nothing. The evening passed quietly, with a bit of reading, some general conversations, and the camp is fairly quiet in itself at the moment. In fact, the whole island is very quiet. Again, something to do with the monsoon season. The weather over the next few days was to prove variable, with occasional cloud bursts even at night, and sunny spells. Nice, pleasant mixture. On Wednesday, the 1st, a new month begins. Set off walking, I only got about 20 minutes when the cloudy skies opened and the world came down. Monsoon rain is definitely different to other types of rain. The heavy rain pounding on the corrugated roofs, the most popular form of roofing construction in this part of the world, leaving must be about an inch of water on the ground at any point in time, at any place. It's heavy, heavy. There is no way out but just to look for shelter. Eventually stopping after about 3/4 of an hour, I proceeded southwards along the west coast for some 4 or 5 kilometers in weather ideal for walking in towards the Tioman Island Resort, situated off of the airstrip The resort itself was very, very empty, devoid of tourists. Certainly this is a more expensive part of the island, although not really, more affluent. Accommodation is not in the form of a big hotel, but rather scattered chalets, all with air conditioning. I keep mentioning air conditioning, but the absence of it is probably better in the long run. Mosquitoes seem to queue up. They actually queue up in the desire to get in, and that requires more of this wonderful rub-on stuff to keep them away. In South Africa, they've got a general insect repellent. Here they got one specially for mosquitoes. Very impressive. On the way back from the walk, two large iguana, that is the type of the lizard family, emerged from the bushes in front of me into a clearing. Both were definitely startled by my presence, and I was a little bit by them. I froze, as experience in Africa had taught me, strange animals. The first of the two raced forward into the clearing some distance away, before looking back, and then eventually disappearing. The second, the larger of the two, froze on a path, but slowly turning its back on me, while keeping its eyes on me and its head turned towards me at the same time. Me thinking their tails part of their first line of defense. It was a total about 4.5-5 feet in length, including that half a looking tail. It's difficult to say where the tail started and the tail ended. The tail slowly flicking, it slowly eased itself back into hiding and refused to re-emerge from me. A beautiful and wonderful encounter with nature. What future has mud wrestling? After yet another lazy evening, I walk to a very adventurous spirit. Is it contagious, you may ask? On the east side of the island is a small village called Kampong Luara. It's about a 2.5-3 hour walk, and is generally reached by boat. But this walk over the mountain ridge which straddles the island, the ascent to the top of the ridge is facilitated by many steps, and you walk beneath that beautiful canopy of greenery which covers the entire island. The vegetation is luscious, thick, and represents a wild diversity of plant and bush life. The green umbrella contains within the sounds of the forest, or is it a jungle? I think it's more inclined towards a jungle than a forest. Although if you've been to the jungle of Borneo, I'm told that they're actually even more junglish. There's a funny feeling there, climbing up the wildness of it all. The tree, whose roots had overtaken a large rock, it more seemed that the rock was burrowing under the tree in an attempt to uproot it. It was that eerie feeling of silence, punctuated by bird calls, insect chirps, monkey shouts, and the occasional coconut crashing through the foliage. Made it to the top of the ridge and down part of the other side, when I noticed that I was just one clouded sponge of sweat. If this was going to turn into a 6-hour walk, I was going to turn into a casualty. I returned disappointed. It seems that I can walk for hours in the flat. Mountain walking requires a completely different set of muscles, which will have to be brushed up quickly over the next month if I am to start climbing any of the volcanoes in Indonesia. This sounds good. Well, there's a couple of volcanoes I want to climb. That afternoon I spend planning ahead. Most of my planning is done in detail for 2 to 3 days, and in broad brush terms then, thereafter. There is really so much to see, and perhaps I need just to set some better priorities on what I am doing. Friday the 3rd and today, Saturday the 4th, are very similar. Little happening. Maybe 5 days is too long to spend in this part of the world. But certainly, I'm getting used to the heat, the climate, and the food, eating plenty of chilies, and surviving. And the rucksack is getting easier to pack it and unpack. It's taking on some sort of familiarity now. And that is about it. There is very little more to say at this stage, but adios for now. I shall return. I shall return. I have now played that section of the tape back to myself, and I'm relatively happy with it. You notice a few gaps when the tape gets switched off, and you hear something else coming on. Well, that is only the earlier recordings. The actual recording you've heard is now my third attempt at it. It's quite some feat. The background noise that you hear is, firstly, it's the fan, which is situated just above my head, which is blowing nice and softly and drying some clothes. The child has not been murdered, but is still living. I'm surprised at how well the sound gets picked up, but you haven't been able to pick up the sea sound. Two other brief words before I sign off on this side, because I will probably not get back to this tape until I'm back on the mainland. First is a brief description of the camp. As you walk into the camp, from one side, the seaside, is the restaurant, dining area, kitchen, which is made out of wood, very thinly constructed, corrugated roof, and that overlooks a relatively rocky beach. There's a little bit of sandy stretch here, but most of the sandy beaches are about a kilometer away. Then bank up into the hillside as such, a series of chalets, probably about 20 in all, giving rise to the maximum complement here is about 40 to 45 people at any point in time. The whole complex itself is very compact and fits in well aesthetically into the hillside. Second point is on the occupying cats. There's a different breed of cat here. Not that they are sort of lions or tigers, but rather they are, you take the conventional European cat, not the fat ones, or the ones like you've seen anywhere else, but normal cats. These ones here are skinnier and smaller, with shorter tails. They seem to have this annoying habit of talking to you wherever they want some food. Interesting diversion. But somebody's getting killed again. It's great fun. That was either human, bird life, or something else. Bye bye.